Welcome to The Brothers Karamazov and Friends, an audiobook disguised as a podcast. Each week we explore the endless pile of pages that comprise the greatest novel of all time, The Brothers Karamazov. We have three rules on TBKAF, and only three. Rule number one, there are no redos. Rule number two, you will receive no help with pronunciation. And rule number three, you have to do voices for the characters. All of them. We will read each week for exactly 1 hour and pick up the next week where we left off. This week we're joined by Laura K. Hendrickson, who hails from Papillion, Nebraska. She's an elementary school music teacher, famous Colonel Mustard actress, and my lover. Good evening, Laura.
Good evening.
You seem a little bit flustered.
I'm just a little nervous, but I'm good.
We mentioned during the initial bit here that you and I share a special relationship.
Yeah.
Would you like to expound upon that at all?
No. No, I'm good.
Excellent. Well, we're very excited to have Laura here on the show, and as you can tell, she is very excited to be here. If I remember right, it was, a couple months ago you came up to me and said, I really want to be on the show.
That's not what
Can
happened.
You make sure to fit me in to the schedule, right?
Sure.
That's how it went, if I'm remembering correctly.
No. Sounds good.
No. We're not really sure how this happened. But regardless, Laura's here, and we are ready to read. Laura will be reading, picking up on page 350. We've made some remarkable progress through this book. She'll be picking up in the middle of 350, in the middle of Rakitin's line, and as soon as we have our timer set, she can go ahead and go.
For you, Alexei.
Why not? I do love him.
And the officer? And the golden message from Mokroy?
That's one thing, and this is another.
Just like a woman.
Don't make me angry, Rakitka! Grushenka caught him up hotly. That is one thing, and this is another. I love Alyosha differently. It's true, I had sly thoughts about you, Alyosha. I'm a low woman. I'm a violent woman. Yet there are moments, Alyosha, when I look upon you as my conscience. I keep thinking, how a man like him must despise a woman like me. I thought the same thing 2 days ago, and as I was running home from the young ladies. I noticed you long ago, Alyosha, and Mitya knows, I told him. And Mitya understands. Will you believe, Alyosha, really I look at you sometimes and feel ashamed. Ashamed of myself. And I don't know, I don't remember how it was that I started thinking about you, or when it was.
Fenya came in and placed a tray on the table, with an unlocked bottle of champagne and three full glasses on it.
Here's the champagne! Rakitin cried. You're excited, Agrafena Alexandrovna, and beside yourself. You'll drink a glass and start dancing. Yeah, even this they couldn't get right, he added, examining the champagne. The old woman poured it in the kitchen, and they brought the bottle without the cork, and it's warm. Well, let's have it anyway.
He went up to the table, took a glass, drank it in one gulp, and poured him another.
One doesn't bump into champagne too often, he said, licking his chops. Hey, Alyosha, take a glass. Prove yourself. What are we going to drink to the gates of paradise? Grusha, take a glass and drink it with us to the gates of paradise.
What gates of paradise?
She took her glass. Alyosha took his, sipped at it, and set the glass down again.
No, I'd better not, he smiled quietly.
But you boasted, Rakitin cried.
Then I won't drink either, Grushenka cut in. I don't want to anyway. Drink the whole bottle yourself, Rakitinka. If Alyosha drinks, I'll drink too.
What sentimental slop, Rakitin taunted. And sitting on his lap all the while. Granted, he has his grief, but what have you got? He rebelled against his god. He was going to gobble sausage.
Why so?
His elder died today, the elder Zosima, the saint.
The elder Zosima died? Grushenka exclaimed. Oh, Lord, I didn't know. She crossed herself piously. Lord, what am I going to do now, sitting on his lap?
She suddenly gave a start, as if in fright, jumped off his knees at once, and sat down on the sofa. Alyosha gave her a long, surprised look, and something seemed to light up his face.
Rakitka, he suddenly said, loudly and firmly. Don't taunt me with having rebelled against my god! I don't want to hold any anger against you, and therefore you be kinder, too.
I've lost such a treasure as you never had, and you cannot judge me now. You'd do better to look here at her. Did you see how she spared me? I came here looking for a wicked soul. I was drawn to that because I was low and wicked myself. But I found a true sister. I found a treasure, a loving soul. She spared me just now. I'm speaking of you, Agrafena Alexandrovna. You restored my soul just now.
Alyosha was breathless, and his lips began to tremble. He stopped.
Really saved you, did she? Rakitin laughed spitefully. Yet she was going to eat you up. Do you know that?
Stop, Rakitin! Grushenka
suddenly jumped up.
Be still, both of you! I'll tell you everything now. You be still, Alyosha, because I feel ashamed of hearing such words from you, because I'm wicked, not good. That's how I am. And you, Rakitina, be still, because you're lying. I did have such a low thought of eating him up, but now you're lying. It's quite different now. And I don't want to hear any more from you, Rakitika. Grushenka spoke all this with unusual excitement.
I'm always delighted at the wonderful little euphemisms they have in this book. Like, Alyosha goes to see a prostitute, and she's going to, quote, eat him up. Because they're very cagey about the way that, what they're going to call it. I don't think at any point in this book they ever say she was going to sleep with him
right.
or anything. It's always like, I'll help him with his little cassock, or I'll eat him up, or something like that. And yet again, Dostoevsky tiptoes around it. Look at them, both senseless, Rakitin hissed, staring at them both in amazement. It's crazy. I feel like I'm in a madhouse. They've both gone soft. They'll start crying in a minute.
I will start crying. I will start crying, Grushenka kept repeating. He called me his sister. I'll never forget it. Just know one thing, Rakitika. I may be wicked, but still I gave an onion.
An onion? Ah, the devil. They really have gone crazy.
Rakitina was surprised at their exhalation, which offended and annoyed him. Though he should have realized that everything had just come together for them both in such a way that their souls were shaken, which does not happen very often in life. But Rakitin, who could be quite sensitive in understanding everything that concerned himself, was quite crude in understanding the feelings and sensations of his neighbors, partly because of his youthful inexperience and partly because of his great egoism.
You see, Alyoshechka? Grushenka turned to him, laughing nervously. I'm boasting to Rakitka that I gave an onion, but I'm not boasting to you. I'll tell you about it for a different reason. It's just a fable, but a good fable. I heard it when I was still a child from my Matryona, who cooks for me now. It goes like this. Once upon a time there was a woman, and she was wicked as wicked could be, and she died. And not one good deed was left behind her. The devils took her and threw her into the lake of fire, and her guardian angel stood thinking, what good deeds of hers can I remember to tell God? Then he remembered and said to God, once she pulled up an onion and gave it to a beggar woman. And God answered, now take that same onion, hold it out to her in the lake, let her take hold of it and pull. And if you pull her out of the lake, she can go to paradise, but if the onion breaks, she can stay where she is. The angel ran to the woman and held out the onion to her. Here, woman, he said, take hold of it and I'll pull. And he began pulling carefully, and had almost pulled her all the way out when other sinners in the lake saw her being pulled out, and all began holding on to her so as to be pulled out with her. But the woman was wicked as wicked could be, and she began to kick them with her feet.
It's me who's getting pulled out, not you! It's my onion, not yours!
No sooner did she say that than the onion broke, and the woman fell back into the lake and is burning there to this day, and the angel wept and went away. That's the fable, Alyosha. I know it by heart, because I myself am that wicked woman. I boasted to Rakitin that I gave an onion, but I'll say it differently to you. In my whole life, I've given just one little onion. That's how much good I've done. And don't praise me after that, Alyosha. Don't think I'm good. I'm wicked, wicked as can be. And if you praise me, you'll make me ashamed. Ah, let me confess everything. Listen, Alyosha, I wanted so much to lure you here, and pestered Rakitin so much that I even promised him 25 rubles if he'd bring you to me. No, wait, Rakitka, she went briskly to the table, opened a drawer, got out a purse, and from the purse took a 25-ruble note.
What nonsense, exclaimed Rakitin, taken aback.
I owe it to you, Rakitka. Take it. You won't refuse. You asked for it yourself. And she flung the bill at him.
Why refuse? Rakitin said in a deep voice, visibly ashamed by his
by disguising his embarrassment with a swagger.
It will truly come in handy. Those fools exist their intelligent man's profit.
And now keep still, Rakitka. What I'm going to say now is not for your ears. Sit there in the corner and keep still. You don't love us, so keep still.
What's there to love for you?
Rakitin snarled, no longer concealing his spite. He put the 25 rubles in his pocket and was decidedly ashamed before Alyosha. He had planned on being paid later so that Alyosha would not know, but now shame made him angry. Up to that moment, he had found it more political not to contradict Grushenka too much, despite all her barbs, since she obviously had some sort of power over him. But now he, too, got angry.
One loves for some reason, and what has either of you done for me?
You should love for no reason, like Alyosha.
How does he love you? What has he shown you that you're making such a fuss about it?
Grushenka stood in the middle of the room. She spoke heatedly, and hysterical notes could be heard in her voice.
Keep still, Rakitka. You don't understand anything about us. And don't you dare speak familiarly with me. It's a tough one.
That was good.
With me again. I forbid it. You're too bold, that's what. Sit in a corner like my lackey and keep still. And now, Alyosha, I will tell the whole pure truth to you alone so that you can see what a creature I am. I do love how Rakitin, who you really hate, gets to spend this, like, 15 minutes of the book with just, like, in his one moment of triumph, everyone turning on him and hating him so much. He's the worst, and everyone just makes, Grushenka especially, just makes him feel horrible. I tell it to you, not to Rakitka. I wanted to ruin you. I was quite determined. That is the great truth. I wanted it so much that I bribed Rakitka with money to bring you. And why did I want it so much? You knew nothing, Alyosha. You used to turn away from me. You'd walk by me with your eyes on the ground. But I looked at you 100 times before. I began asking everyone about you. Your face stayed in my heart. He despises me, I thought. He doesn't know. This is a long... We just turned the page to reveal a whole lot of text in this paragraph. And finally, such a feeling took hold of me that I was surprised at myself. Why should I be afraid of a boy like him? I'll eat him up and laugh. I was so angry. Believe me, no one here dares to say or think they can come to Agrafena Alexandrovna for that bad thing. I have only the old man here. I'm bought and sold to him. Satan married us, but there's no one else. I'm continually also confused about whether or not Grushenka is a prostitute. Well, I know that she's supposedly a prostitute, but they also often mention that there's only one person who she sleeps, who she eats up for money.
But a normal prostitute does a lot more eating than that.
Yeah. So I really do not, I don't know, I'm confused. Laura and I are also sharing a delicious bottle of Riesling.
It's just so hot in this room.
It is.
It's so hot.
The studio that we record in is
right.
Really warm today, and so...
Only one thing cools me down.
Okay, oh, I get some language here. Okay. Yet looking at you, I was determined. I'll eat him up. Eat him up and laugh. See what a wicked bitch I am, and you called me your sister. Then the man who wronged me has come. I'm sitting here waiting for his message. Do you know that this man has been to me? It's 5 years since Kuzma brought me here. I used to sit hiding from people so that people wouldn't see or hear me. A silly slip of a girl, sitting and crying, not sleeping all night, thinking, where is he now, the man who wronged me? He must be laughing at me with some other woman, and what won't I do to him? If only I ever see him, if only I meet him, I'll make him pay. How I'll make him pay! At night, in the dark, I sobbed into the pillow and kept thinking it all over. I tore my heart on purpose to ease it with spite. How I'll make him pay, oh, how I will! I would sometimes even scream in the darkness. Then I would suddenly remember that I was not going to do anything to him, but that he was laughing at me now, or maybe he had quite forgotten me, just didn't remember. And then I would throw myself from my bed onto the floor, flooding myself with helpless tears. And shake till dawn. In the morning I would get up worse than a dog, ready to tear the whole world apart. And then you know what? I began saving money, became merciless, grew fat,
And do you think I got any smarter? Not a bit. No one sees it, no one in the whole universe knows it, but when the dark of night falls, I sometimes lie just as I used to, as a young girl, 5 years ago, gnashing my teeth and crying all night, thinking, I'll show him, oh yes, I'll show him. You hear what I'm saying? Now try to understand me. A month ago, I suddenly received this letter. He's coming. His wife died. He wants to see me. It took my breath away. Lord, I suddenly thought, what if he comes and whistles for me, calls me, and I just crawl to him like a little dog, guilty and beaten? I thought of it and couldn't believe myself. Am I so base? Will I just run to him? And I've been so angry with myself all this month that it's even worse than 5 years ago. Now you see how violent, how wild I am, Alyosha. I've spoken out the whole truth to you. I've been toying with Mitya so as not to run to the other one. Keep still, Rakitin. It's not for you to judge me. I'm not telling it to you. Before you came, I was lying here waiting, thinking, deciding my whole fate. And you will never know what was in my heart. No, Alyosha, tell your young lady not to be angry for 2 days ago. No one in the whole world knows how I feel now, or can know, because maybe I'll take a knife with me today. I haven't decided yet.
And having uttered this pathetic phrase, Grushenka suddenly could not help herself. She broke off, covered her face with her hands, threw herself onto the sofa, into the pillows, and sobbed like a little babe child. Alyosha stood up and went over to Rakitin.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out... this is Alyosha. Misha is a very strange version of Rakitin. Often in the book, they've got these, like, you know, like, little version, several different versions of people's names, like nicknames, like Alyoshechka or right. Mitka, or Dmitri is Mitka.
Okay.
And so you can usually figure out why it's that. Rakitin's apparently one of them is Misha. I don't understand.
Misha!
He said,
don't be angry! You're offended with her, but don't be angry. Did you hear her just now? One cannot ask so much of a human soul. One should be more merciful.
Alyosha said this from an unrestrainable impulse of his heart. He had to speak out, and he turned to Rakitin. If there had been no Rakitin, he would have begun exclaiming to himself. But Rakitin looked at him with a sneer, and Alyosha suddenly stopped.
They just loaded you with your elder, and now you're fired at your elder, and now you've fired your elder off at me, Alyoshechka, or Alyoshenka, little man of God, Rakitin said with a hateful smile.
Don't laugh, Rakitin! Don't sneer! Don't speak of the deceased! He is higher than anyone who has ever lived! Alyosha cried with tears in his voice. I stood up to speak to you, not as a judge, but as the lowliest of the accused. Who am I compared with her? I came here seeking my own ruin, saying, who cares, who cares, because of my faint-heartedness, but she, after 5 years of torment, as soon as someone comes and speaks a sincere word to her, forgets everything, and weeps. The man who wronged her has come back. He is calling her, and she forgives him everything and hastens to him with joy. And she won't take a knife. She won't. No, I am not like that. I don't know whether you are like that, Misha, but I am not like that. I learned this lesson today, just now. She is higher in love than we are. Have you ever heard her speak before of what she just told now? No, you have not. If you had, you would have understood everything long ago. And the other woman who was offended 2 days ago, she too must forgive. And she will always forgive if she knows, and she will know. This soul is not reconciled yet. It must be spared. Maybe there is a treasure in this soul.
Alyosha fell silent because his breath failed him. Rakitin, despite all his anger, watched in amazement. He had never expected such a tirade from the quiet Alyosha.
Quite a lawyer we've got here. Have you fallen in love with her or something? You win, Agrafena Alexandrovna. Our aesthetic is really in love with you, he shouted with an insolent laugh.
Grushenka raised her head from the pillow and looked at Alyosha. A tender smile shone on her face, somehow suddenly swollen with tears.
Let him be, Alyosha, my cherub. You see how he is. He's not worth talking to. Mikhail Opsivik, she turned to Rakitin. I was about to ask you for forgiveness for having been rude to you, but now I don't want to. Alyosha, come here and sit down. She beckoned to him with a joyful smile. Sit down, so, and tell me. She took his hand, smiling, and peered into his face. You tell me. Do I love this man or not? The one who wronged me, do I love him or not? I was lying here in the dark before you came and kept asking my heart, do I love this man or not?
Deliver me, Alyosha. The time has come. It shall be as you decided. Should I forgive him or not?
But you've already forgiven him,
Alyosha said, smiling.
Yes, I've forgiven him, Grushenka said meaningly. What a base heart to my base heart. She suddenly snatched a glass from the table, drank it in one gulp, held it up, and smashed it as hard as she could on the floor. The glass shattered and tinkled. A certain cruel line flashed in her smile.
Or maybe I haven't forgiven him yet, she said, somehow menacingly.
This writer also keeps saying, or Dostoevsky keeps saying somehow in strange places. I don't know if you've noticed that. She said somehow menacingly. As if, like, no one knows. Either it wasn't menacing, or no one really knows how she said it so menacing. dropping her eyes to the ground, as though she were alone, talking to herself.
Maybe my heart is only getting ready to forgive him. I still have to struggle with my heart. You see, Alyosha, I've grown terribly fond of my tears over these 5 years. Maybe I'll come to love only my wrong, and not him at all.
I'd hate to be in his skin,
Rakitin hissed.
And you won't be, Rakitka. You'll never be in his skin. You'll make shoes for me, Rakitka. That's what I'll have you do, and you'll never get a woman like me. Maybe he won't either.
No? Then why all this finery?
Rakitin taunted her slyly.
Don't reproach me with my finery, Rakitka. You don't know the whole of my heart yet. If I choose, I'll tear it off right now. I'll tear it off this very minute, she cried in a ringing voice. You don't know why I need this finery, Rakitka. Maybe I'll go up to him and say, did you ever see me like this? He left a 17-year-old girl, skinny, consumptive crybaby. I'll sit down beside him. I'll seduce him. I'll set him on fire. Take a good look at me now, my dear sir, because that's all you'll get. And there's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip.
What? I don't know what that means, but I assume it means something seductive.
Maybe that's why I need this finery, Rakitka, Grushenka finished with a malicious little laugh. I'm violent, Alyosha, I'm wild. I'll tear off my finery, I'll go maim myself, my beauty, I'll burn my face and slash it with a knife, and go begging. If I choose, I won't go anywhere or to anyone. If I choose, I'll send everything back to Kuzma tomorrow. All his presents and all his money and go and work all my life as a charwoman. You think I won't do it, Rakitka? You think I won't dare to do it? I will. I will do it. I can do it now. Only don't annoy me. And I'll get rid of that one. A fig for him. He won't help me. He won't get me.
She shouted these last words hysterically, but again could not help herself. Covered her face with her hands, threw herself onto the pillow again. Shook with sobs. Rakitin stood up.
Time to go, he said. It's late. They won't let us into the monastery.
Grushenka leapt to her feet.
You're not going to leave, Alyosha, she exclaimed in sorrowful amazement. But what are you doing to me? You stirred me all up, tormented me. And now for another night I'll be left alone again.
What do you want him to do, spend the night here?
He can if he wants to. I can go by myself, Rakitin joked. Casually, cautiously.
Keep still, you wicked soul, Grushenka shouted furiously at him. You never said anything like what he came and told me.
Just what did he tell you?
Rakitin grumbled irritably.
I don't know. I don't know what he told me. My heart heard it. He wrung my heart. He's the first to pity me and the only one, that's what. Why didn't you come before, you cherub?
She suddenly fell on her knees to him as if beside herself.
All my life I've been waiting for such a one as you. I knew someone like that would come and forgive me. I believed that someone would love me, a dirty woman, not only for my shame.
What did I do for you?
Alyosha answered with a tender smile, and he bent down to her and gently took her hand.
I just gave you an onion. One little onion. That's all. That's all.
There aren't any redos, but I would like to hear you read that I just gave an onion line again.
Are you serious?
No. Oh. It was really funny. Having said that, he himself started weeping. At the same moment, there was a sudden noise in the doorway. Someone came into the front hall. Grushenka jumped up, looking terribly frightened. Fenya rushed noisily into the room, shouting,
My lady, my dear, my lady, a messenger has ridden up, she exclaimed joyfully and breathlessly. A carriage has come for you from Mokroy. Timofey, the coachman with a troika. They're changing horses right now. The letter, my lady, here's the letter.
She was holding the letter in her hand, waving it in the air all the while she was shouting. Grushenka snatched the letter from her and brought it near the candle. It was just a note, a few lines, and she read it in a moment.
He's calling me, she cried, quiet, pale, her face twisted in a painful smile. He's whistling. Crawl, little dog.
Only for one moment did she hesitate. Suddenly the blood rushed to her head and brought fire to her cheeks.
I'm going, she suddenly exclaimed. Oh, my fine ears! Farewell, everyone, farewell, Alyosha, my fate is decided. Go, go, all of you, go away. I don't want to see you. Grushenka is flying to a new life. Rakitika, don't you think ill of me either. Maybe I'm going to my death. Ah, I feel drunk.
She left them suddenly and ran to her bedroom.
Well, she can't be bothered with us now, Rakitin
growled.
Let's go, or there may be more of this female screaming. I'm sick of these tearful screams.
Alyosha mechanically allowed himself to be let out. The carriage stood in the yard. The horses were being unharnessed. People were bustling about with lanterns. A fresh troika was being led in through the open gate. But just as Alyosha and Rakitka were stepping off the porch, the window of Grushenka's bedroom suddenly opened, and she called after Alyosha in a ringing voice.
Alyosha, bow to your brother Matkina for me, and tell him not to think ill of me, his wicked woman, and tell him, too, that I, Grushenka, has fallen to a scoundrel, and not to you, a noble man. And add this, too, that Grushenka loved him for 1 hour, just for 1 hour she loved him, and from now on he should remember that hour all his life. Tell him that tell him is what Grushenka bids you forever.
She finished in a voice full of weeping. The window slammed shut.
Rakitka grunted, laughing. She does in your brother, Matkinka, and then tells him to remember all his life. What a carnivore.
Alyosha made no reply, as if he had not heard. He walked briskly beside Rakitin, apparently in a great hurry. He walked mechanically, his mind apparently elsewhere. Rakitin was suddenly stung, as if someone had touched him on an open wound. He had been expecting something quite different when he brought Grushenka and Alyosha together. What had happened was something other than what he had wanted so much.
He's a Pole, this officer of hers. He spoke again, restraining himself. And he's not even an officer now. He served as a customer clerk in Siberia, somewhere on the Chinese border, just some runty little Polak. They say he lost his job. Now he's heard that Grushenka has some money, so he's come back. That's the whole miracle.
Again, it was as if Alyosha did not hear. Rakitin could not help himself.
So you convinced a sinful woman? He laughed spitefully to Alyosha. Turned a harlot onto the path of truth? Drove out the 7 devils, eh? So here's where today's expected miracles took place.
Stop it, Rakitin!
Alyosha replied with suffering in his soul.
And now you despise me for those 25 rubles? You think I sold a true friend? But you're not Christ, and I'm not Judas.
Oh, Rakitin, I assure you I'd forgotten all about that!
Alyosha exclaimed.
You reminded me of it yourself!
But now Rakitin finally got mad.
The devil take you, one and all, he suddenly yelled. Why the devil did I have anything to do with you? I don't even want to know you anymore. Go by yourself. There's your road.
And turning abruptly into another street, he left Alyosha alone in the dark. Alyosha walked out of town and went across the fields to the monastery.
Chapter 4, Cana of Galilee. This is one of my favorite chapters. This might be my favorite. Well, one of my favorite chapters of the book.
Okay.
Took a while to decide on what level the favoriteness went. It was very late by monastery rules when Alyosha came to the hermitage. The gatekeeper let him in by a special entrance. It had already struck 9, the hour of general rest and quiet, after such a troubled day for them all. Alyosha timidly opened the door and entered the elder's cell, where his coffin now stood. There was no one in the cell but Father Paisi, who was alone reading the gospel over the coffin, and the young novice Porphyry, who, worn out from the previous night's conversation and the day's commotion, slept a sound young sleep on the floor in the next room. Father Paisi, though he had heard Alyosha come in, did not even look up at him. Alyosha turned to the right of the door, went to the corner, knelt, and began to pray. His soul was overflowing, but somehow vaguely, and no single sensation stood out, making itself felt too much. On the contrary, one followed another in a sort of slow and calm rotation. But there was sweetness in his heart, and strangely, Alyosha was not surprised at that. Again, he saw this coffin before him, and this dead man all covered up in it, who had been so precious to him. But in his soul, there was none of that weeping, gnawing, tormenting pity that had been there earlier in the morning. Now, as he entered, he fell down before the coffin as if it were a holy thing. But joy, joy was shining in his mind and in his heart. The window of the cell was open, the air was fresh and rather cool. The smell must have become even worse if they decided to open the window, Alyosha thought. But even this thought about the putrid odor, which only recently had seemed to him so terrible and inglorious, did not now stir up in any of his former anguish and indignation. He quietly began praying, and soon felt that he was praying almost mechanically. Fragments of thoughts flashed in his soul, catching fire like little stars, and dying out at once to give way to others. Yet there reigned in his soul something whole, firm, assuaging, and he was conscious of it himself. He would ardently begin a prayer. He wanted so much to give thanks and to love. But having begun the prayer, he would suddenly pass to something else, lapse into thought, and forget both his prayer and what had interrupted it. He tried listening to what Father Picey was reading, but being very worn out, he began little by little to doze off.
And on the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, said Father Picey. And the mother of Jesus was there, and both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage.
Poor Father Picey has the worst voice.
Okay, he's fine.
Marriage? What was that? Marriage
swept like a whirlwind through Alyosha's mind.
There is happiness for her, too. She went to the feast. No, she didn't take a knife. She didn't take a knife. That was only a pathetic phrase. Well, one should forgive pathetic phrases. One must. Pathetic phrases ease the soul. Without them, men's grief would be too heavy. Rakitin walked off into the alley. As long as Rakitin thinks about his grudges, he will always walk off into some alley. But the road is wide, straight, bright crystal, and the sun is at the end of it. Oh, what are they reading?
You kind of sound like Pinocchio.
Pinocchio?
Yeah, when you do that voice.
Oh, we're going for Mickey Mouse, but... Oh. Well, I can't do the Mickey Mouse very well.
But, Pinocchio? Like, every time you read, I kind of think of Pinocchio.
Think of Pinocchio?
And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said unto them, they have no wine! Alyosha overheard.
Oh, yes!
This is really is one of the most beautiful parts of the book. But we're making it the best.
By the best, I think you mean more.
Just both of us.
Oh, yes! I've been missing it, and I didn't want to miss it. I love that passage. It's Cana of Galilee, the first miracle. Oh, that miracle. Oh, that lovely miracle. Not grief, but men's joy Christ visited when he worked his first miracle. He helped men's joy. He who loves men loves their joy. The dead man used to repeat it all the time. It was one of his main thoughts. One cannot live without joy, says Mitya. Yes, Mitya. All that is true and beautiful is always full of all forgiveness. That too, he used to say.
Jesus saith unto her, Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it.
Do it. Joy, this is the joy of some poor, very poor people. Why, of course they were poor, if there wasn't even enough wine for the wedding. Historians write that the people living around the Lake of Gennesaret and in all those parts were the poorest people imaginable. And the other great heart of the other great being, who was right there too, his mother, knew that he came down then not just for his great and awful deed, but that his heart was also open to the simple, artless merrymaking of some uncouth but guileless bees, who lovingly invited him to their poor marriage feast. Mine hour is not yet come, he says with a quiet smile. He must have smiled meekly to her. Indeed, was it to increase the wine at poor weddings that he came down to earth? Yet he went and did what she asked. Ah, he's reading again.
Oh, that's what I keep thinking you're going to say. Jesus saith unto them, Fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, Draw out now and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not hence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom and said unto him, Every man at the beginning doth set forth good worse, but thou hast kept the good wine until now.
But what's this? What's this? Why are the walls of the room opening out? Oh, yes, this is the marriage, the wedding feast. Yes, of course. Here are the guests. Here are the newlyweds and the festive crowd, and where's the wise ruler of the feast? But who is this? Who? Again, the room is opening out. Who is getting up from the big table? What? Is he here, too? Why, he's in the coffin. But here, too. He's gotten up. He's seen me. He's coming over. Lord!
Yes, to him he came. The little, wizened old man with fine wrinkles on his face, joyful and quietly laughing. Now there was no coffin anymore, and he was wearing the same clothes as the day before, when he sat with them and visitors gathered around him. His face was well uncovered, and his eyes were radiant. Can it be that he, too, is at the banquet, that he, too, has been called to the marriage in Cana of Galilee?
I, too, my dear, I, too, have been called and chosen.
The quiet voice spoke over him.
Why are you hiding here, out of sight? Come and join us.
His voice, the elder Zoisma's voice. How could it be anyone else since he was calling? The elder raised Alyosha a little with his hand, and Alyosha got up from his knee.
We are rejoicing,
the little wizened man continued.
We are drinking new wine, the wine of a new and great joy. See how many guests there are? Here are the bridegroom and the bride. Here is the wise ruler of the feast, tasting the new wine. Why are you marveling at me? I gave a little onion, and so I am here. And there are many here who only gave an onion, only one little onion. What are our deeds? And you, quiet one, you, my weak boy, today you too were able to give a little onion to a woman who hungered. Begin, my dear, begin, my meek one, to do your work. And do you see our son? Do you see him?
I'm afraid. I don't dare to look, whispered Alyosha.
I should mention that that's, and do you see our son, S-U-N, and not son, S-O-N, which would be much more confusing conversation topic for the old monk and Alyosha.
Do not be afraid of him. Awful is his greatness before us. Terrible is his loftiness. Yet he is boundlessly merciful. He became like us out of love, and he is rejoicing with us, transforming water into wine, that the joy of the guests may not end. He is waiting for new guests. He is ceaselessly calling new guests now and unto ages of ages. See, they are bringing the new wine. The vessels are being brought in.
Something burned in Alyosha's heart. Something suddenly filled him, almost painfully. Tears of rapture nearly burst from his soul. He stretched out his hand, gave a short cry, and woke up.
Again the coffin, the open window, and the quiet, solemn, distinct reading of the gospel. But Alyosha no longer listened to what was being read. Strangely, he had fallen asleep on his knees, but now he was standing, and suddenly, as if torn from his place, with three firm, quick steps, he went up to the coffin. He even brushed Father Pisces with his shoulder without noticing it. The latter raised his eyes from the book for a moment, but looked away again at once, realizing that something strange was happening with the boy. For about half a minute, Alyosha gazed at the coffin, at the covered-up, motionless dead man stretched out with an icon on his chest, and the cowl with an eight-pointed cross on his head. A moment ago, he had heard his voice, and this voice was still sounding in his ears. He listened, waiting to hear more, but suddenly turned abruptly and walked out of the cell.
He did not stop on the porch either, but went quickly down the steps. Filled with rapture, his soul yearned for freedom, space, vastness. Over him, the heavenly dome full of quiet, shining stars hung boundlessly. From the zenith to the horizon, the still, dim Milky Way stretches its double strands. Night, fresh and quiet, almost unstirring, enveloped the earth. The white towers of golden domes of the church gleamed in the sapphire sky. The luxuriant autumn flowers in the flower beds near the house had fallen asleep until morning. The silence of the earth seemed to merge with the silence of the heavens. The mystery of the earth touched the mystery of the stars. Alyosha stood gazing, and suddenly, as if he had been cut down, threw himself to the earth.
He did not know why he was embracing it. He did not try to understand why he longed so irresistibly to kiss it, to kiss all of it. But he was kissing it, weeping, sobbing, and watering it with his tears, and he vowed ecstatically to love it unto ages of ages.
Water the earth with the tears of your joy, and love those tears,
rang in his soul. What was he weeping for? Oh, in his rapture he wept even for the stars that shone on him from the abyss,
and he was not ashamed of this ecstasy.
It was as if threads from all those innumerable worlds of God all came together in his soul, and he was trembling all over, touching other worlds. He wanted to forgive everyone and for everything, and to ask forgiveness. Oh, not for himself, but for all and for everything, as others are asking me, rang again in his soul. But with each moment, he felt clearly and almost tangibly something as firm and immovable as this heavenly vault descend into his soul. Some sort of idea, as it were, was coming to reign in his mind, now for the whole of his life and into ages of ages. He fell to the earth a weak youth, and rose up a fighter, steadfast for the rest of his life, and he knew it and felt it suddenly, in that very moment of his ecstasy. Never, never in all his life would Alyosha forget that moment. "Someone visited my soul in that hour," he would say afterwards, with firm belief in his words.
3 days later, he left the monastery, which was also in accordance with the words of his late elder, who had bidden him to sojourn in the world.
Book 8. Mitya. Chapter 1. Kuzma Samsonov. This might be a good time to discuss. Up until now, we've really been doing this Walt Disney, Alyosha voice. But now that he is matured into a man almost instantly, in this moment of rapture, should we change Alyosha's voice? What do you think?
Well, I kind of saw what he did there on that last page. I noticed that the one line that he did speak, he changed his voice, and I kind of thought, is that against the rule? But I wasn't exactly sure.
Well, you know, change in character might be a change in voice. We should ask our Twitter followers to chime in on this.
For sure.
This could be yet another one of our very popular Twitter votes. Send in your tweets. Should Alyosha's voice remain beloved and juvenile, or should he be a firm and strong man now? Let us know. We hope we don't shut down the internet with all of this.
I'm sure it's going to be a popular hashtag.
Yeah. Hashtag, what should we do with Alyosha's voice?
Hashtag, young voice. Hashtag, strong man voice.
Yeah. Any of those hashtags will work. Maybe do all of them. Book 8, Mitya, Chapter 1, Kuzma Samsonov. But Dmitri Fyodorovich, to whom Grushenka, flying to her new life, had ordered her last farewell sent, and whom she bade farewell, and whom she bade remember forever the 1 hour of her love, unaware as he was of what had happened with her, was at that moment also running around in terrible disarray. For the past 2 days he had been in such an unimaginable state that, as he himself said afterwards, he might well have come down with brain fever. Alyosha had been unable to find him the morning before, and that same day his brother Ivan had been unable to arrange a meeting with him in the tavern. I wonder what brain fever is as compared to a regular fever.
Yeah,
I was assuming that a brain fever would be when your brain was too hot, but I'm assuming that's also what a regular fever is.
Maybe it's... Never mind. I was going to say, maybe it's just where your head, only your head is really hot, and like the rest of your body is normal temperature touch.
Or cold.
Or super cold.
The rest of the body is freezing,
and then your brain,
and the brain is on fire. Probably that.
Pretty sure that's it.
Alyosha had been unable to find him in the morning before, and that same day his brother Ivan had been unable to arrange a meeting with him in the tavern. The owners of the little apartment he lived in covered his traces, as he had ordered them to do, and he in those 2 days had literally been rushing in all directions, struggling with his fate and trying to save himself, as he put it afterwards, and had even flown out of town for a few hours on some urgent business, though he was afraid to leave Grushenka unwatched even for a moment. All of this was found out later in the most detailed and documented form, but here we shall outline only the most necessary facts from the history of those 2 terrible days of his life, which preceded the horrible catastrophe that broke so suddenly upon his fate.
Grushenka, though, it was true that she had loved him genuinely and sincerely for one little hour. At the same time, she would torment him quite cruelly and mercilessly. The worst thing was that he could make out nothing of her intentions. It was impossible to coax them out of her, either with tenderness or by force. She would not give in, and would only be... Oh, boy. and would only become angry and turn her back on him altogether, that he understood clearly at the time. He then suspected quite correctly that she herself was caught in some sort of struggle, in some sort of extraordinary indecision, trying to make up her mind and unable to make it up, and he therefore supposed, with a sinking heart and not groundlessly, that at moments she must simply hate him and his passion. Perhaps that was the case, but what precisely Grushenka was anguished about, he still did not understand. So far as he was concerned, the whole tormenting question formed itself into two definitions. Either him, Mitya, or Fyodor Pavlovich. Here, incidentally, one firm fact must be noted. He was quite certain that Fyodor Pavlovich would be sure to offer Grushenka if he had not already offered a lawful marriage, and did not believe for a moment that the old voluptuary hoped to get off for a mere 3,000. This Mita deduced from his knowledge of Grushenka and her character, which was why it could sometimes seem to him that all of Grushenka's torment and all of her indecision came simply from the fact that she did not know which of them to choose, and which of them would be the more profitable for her. Strangely enough, in those days, she did not even think of thinking about the imminent return of the officer, that is, the fatal man in Grushenka's life, whose arrival she awaited with such fear and agitation. True, in the past few days, Grushenka had been quite silent with him on the subject. Nevertheless, he had been fully informed by her of the letter she had received in the month earlier from her former seducer. And he had also been partly informed of the content of the letter. In a surprised moment, Grushenka had shown him the letter, but to her surprise, he placed very little value on this letter, and it would be quite difficult to explain why. Perhaps simply because he was so oppressed by all the ugliness and horror of his struggle with his own father for this woman, that he could not even imagine anything more terrible or dangerous for himself, at least not at the time. He simply did not believe in this fiancé who had suddenly sprung from somewhere after a 5-year disappearance, much less that he would soon arrive. And this first letter from the officer, which was shown to Mitkenko, itself spoke quite uncertainly about the coming of his new rival mentality. It should be noted that at the time... vague letter that very grandiloquent and full of nothing but sentimentality. It should be noted that at the time Grushenka concealed from him the last lines of the letter, which spoke with more certainty about his return. Besides, Mitkinka later recalled that at the moment he had detected, as it were, some involuntary and proud contempt of this missive from Siberia on the part of Grushenka herself. After that, Grushenka told Mitka nothing about any of her subsequent dealings with this new rival, so it happened that little by little, he even quite forgot about the officer. He thought only that whatever the outcome and whatever turn the affair might take, his impending final clash with Fyodor Pavlovich was too near and must be resolved before anything else. With a sinking soul, he waited every moment for Grushenka's decision and kept thinking that it would occur as if unexpectedly by inspiration. Suddenly she would tell him, Take me, I'm yours forever! And it would all be over. He would snatch her up and take her to the end of the world at once. Oh, at once, take her far away, as far as possible, if not to the end of the world, then somewhere to the end of Russia. Marry her there and settle down with her incognito, so that no one would know anything about them, not here, not there, not anywhere. Then a totally new life would begin at once. He dreamed of this renewed and now virtuous life. It must be virtuous. Ceasingly and feverishly, he thirsted for this resurrection and renewal. The vile bog he had gotten stuck in his own will burden him too much, and like a great many men in the cases, he believed most of all in a change of place. If only it weren't for the people, for these people, if only it weren't for these circumstances. If only one could fly away from this cursed place and everything would be reborn. That was what he believed and what he longed for.
But that would only be in the case of the first happy solution to the question. There was another solution. He imagined a different and terrible ending. She suddenly says to him,
"Go, I've just reached an agreement with Fyodor Pavlovich and shall marry him. You're no longer needed."
And then... But then... Incidentally, Mickey did not know what would happen then. Until the very last hour, he did not know. We must clear him of that. He had no definite intentions. The crime had not been thought out. He just watched, spied, and suffered, while preparing himself only for the first happy ending to his fate. He even drove away all other thoughts. But here, quite a different torment began. Here arose a quite new and unrelated, but equally fatal and insoluble circumstance.
Namely, if she should say to him, "I'm yours, take me away," how was he to take her away? Where would he get the means, the money to do it? Just at that time, he had exhausted all of his income from Fyodor Pavlovich's handouts, which until then had continued nonstop for so many years. Of course, Grushenka had money, but on this point, Mitya suddenly turned out to be terribly proud. He wanted to take her away himself and start a new life with her on his own money, not on hers. He could not even imagine himself taking money from her, and suffered at the thought to the point of painful revulsion. I will not enlarge upon this fact or analyze it. I will only note that such was the case. It was the cast of his soul at the moment. All of this might well have proceeded indirectly and unwittingly, as it were, from the secret sufferings of his conscience over Katerina Ivanovna's money, which he had thievishly appropriated. "I'm a scoundrel before one woman, and I'll prove at once to be a scoundrel before the other," he thought then, as he himself confessed later. "And Grushenka, if she finds out, will not want such a scoundrel." And so, where to find the means, where to find the fatal money? Otherwise, all was lost, and nothing would happen. For those the sole reason, and there was enough money. Oh, shame!
To anticipate, the thing was that he perhaps knew where to get the money. He perhaps knew where it lay. I will not go into details just now, as it will all become clear later, but what his main trouble consisted of, I will say, albeit vaguely. In order to take this money that was lying somewhere, in order to have the right to take it, it was necessary beforehand to return the 3,000 to Katerina Ivanovna. Otherwise, I am a pickpocket, I am a scoundrel, and do not want to begin a new life as a scoundrel, Mitya decided, and therefore he decided to turn the whole world upside down, if need be, but to be sure to return the 3,000 to Katerina Ivanovna at all costs, and before all else. The final working out of this decision took place in him, so to speak, in the last hours of his life. That is, starting from his last meeting with Alyosha 2 days before, in the evening on the road, after Grushenka had insulted Katerina Ivanovna. And Mitya, having listened to Alyosha's account of it, admitted that he was a scoundrel and asked that Katerina Ivanovna be told so, if it's any comfort to her. Right then, that night, after parting with his brother, he had felt in his frenzy that it would be better even to kill and rob someone but repay his debt to Katya. Better to stand as a murderer and a thief before that, Better to stand as a murderer and a thief before that robbed and murdered man and before everyone and go to Siberia than that Katya should have the right to say I betrayed her and then stole money from her and with that money ran away with Grushenka to start a virtuous life. That I cannot do. Thus spoke Mitya, gnashing his teeth, and he might well have imagined at times that he would end up with brain fever. But meanwhile, he went on struggling. We may have to, in this next paragraph.
And by paragraph, I mean like 2.5
yeah,
pages.
Yeah, it might be one where we have a split on the page, so we'll do that.
Strangely enough, it would seem that after such a decision, nothing was left for him but despair. For how could one suddenly come up with so much money, especially such a pauper as he? Nevertheless, to the very end, he kept hoping that he would get the 3,000, and the 3,000, that the money would come to him, that it would somehow fly down to him by itself, from the sky, no less. But that is precisely how things happen with people like Dmitri Fyodorovich, who all their lives know only how to spend the squander inherited money that they got without any effort, but have no idea on how the money is earned. The most fantastic whirlwind arose in his head just after he had parted with Alyosha. 2 days before, he confessed all his thoughts. Thus it came about that he started with the wildest enterprise. Yes, perhaps with such people, precisely in such situations, it is most impossible and fantastic enterprises that seem to offer the best possibilities. He suddenly decided to go to the merchant Samsonov, Grushenka's patron, to offer him a plan, to obtain from him, for this plan, the entire sum he needed at once. He had not the slightest doubt about the commercial aspects of his plan, but doubted only how Samsonov himself might view his escapade if he chose to look beyond its commercial aspects. Though Mitya knew the merchant by sight, he was not acquainted with him and had never once spoke to him. But for some reason, the conviction had settled in him, even much earlier than this old prolificate now with 1 foot in the grave, might not be at all averse at the moment to Grushenka somehow arranging her life honorably and marrying a trustworthy man.
And that he was not, and that he not only would not resist, but even wished it himself, and would further it if the occasion should arise. He also concluded, either from rumors or from something Grushenka had said, that the old man might prefer him for Grushenka over Fyodor Pavlovich. Perhaps, to many readers of our story, the expectation of such help and the intention of taking his fiancée from the hand of her patron, so to speak, were much too crude and unscrupulous on Dmitri Fyodorovich's part. I can only note that Mitya thought of Grushenka's past as definitively past. He looked upon that past with infinite compassion and decided with all the fire of his passion that once Grushenka had told him she loved him and would marry him, a completely new Grushenka would begin at once, and together with her a completely new Dmitri Fyodorovich, with no vices now, but with virtues only. They would forgive each other and start their life quite anew. As for Kuzma Samsonov, he considered him a fatal man in Grushenka's life, and that former swallowed-up past, whom, however, she had never loved, and who, this is above all, was now also past done with, so that he was no longer there at all. And besides, Mitya could not even regard him as a man now, because it was known to all and sundry in town that he was an ailing wreck, who maintained only fatherly relations, so to speak, with... I don't know if that dirty joke was intentional or not, but... He maintained only fatherly intentions, so to speak, with Grushenka, and not at all on the same terms as before, and that it had been so for a long time, almost a year. In any case, there was such simple-heartedness here on Mitya's part, for with all his vices, this was a very simple-hearted man. Because of his simple-heartedness, by the way, he was seriously convinced that old Kuzma, preparing to depart to another world, felt sincerely repentant for his past with Grushenka, and that she had no more faithful patron and friend than this already harmless old man. I thought that was still the same paragraph, but it's not.
Oh.
Whoops.
The day after his conversation with Alyosha in the field, following which he had hardly slept the whole night, Mitya appeared at Samsonov's house at about 10 o'clock in the morning and asked to be announced. The house was old, gloomy, spacious, two-storied, with outbuildings and a cottage in the yard. On the ground floor lived Samsonov's two married sons with their families, his elderly sister and one unmarried daughter. The cottage housed his two clerks, one of whom also had a large family. Both his children and his clerks were cramped in their quarters, but the old man occupied the upper floor by himself and would not share it, even with his daughter, who looked after him and at regular hours or at his irregular summons, had each time to run up to him from downstairs, despite her chronic shortness of breath. This upstairs consisted of a number of large formal rooms furnished in the merchant style of old, with long, dull rows of clumsy mahogany armchairs and side chairs along with walls, with crystal chandeliers and dust covers and sullen mirrors between the windows. All these rooms stood completely empty and uninhabited because the sick old man huddled himself in one little room, his remote and tiny bedroom, where he was waited on by an old woman in a kerchief and a lad who resigned on the bench in the front hall. Because of his swollen legs, the old man was almost entirely unable to walk and only rarely got up from his leather chair when the old woman holding him under the arms would take him once or twice around the room. He was severe He was severe and taciturn, even with his old woman. When the arrival of the captain was announced to him, he at once gave orders not to admit him, but Misia insisted and asked to be announced a second time. Kuzmich questioned the lad in detail. How did he look? Was he drunk? Was he making trouble? The answer was sober, but won't go away. The old man again refused to admit him. Then Mitya, who had foreseen as much and therefore had purposely brought paper and pencil with him, wrote clearly on a piece of paper the words, on most important business, closely concerning Agrippina Alexandrovna, and sent it to the old man. Having thought a little, the old man told the lad to show the visitor to the drawing room, and sent the old woman downstairs with an order for his younger son to report upstairs at once. This younger son, a man over 6 feet tall and of enormous strength, who shaved his beard and dressed in German fashion, Samsonov himself wore a captain and had a beard, came immediately and without a word. They all trembled before their father. The father sent for this Saltwort, not so much from fear of the captain. He was no coward, as simply to have him there, just in case he should need a witness. Accompanied by his son, who supported him under his arm, and by the lad, he finally came sailing into the drawing room.
I keep picturing Samsonov as Martin Short in that episode of Arrested Development, when he's their rich uncle and he has the super strong guy carry him around.
Oh, yeah.
Swoop me, dragon!
That's good.
Thank you for joining us on the Brothers Karamazov and Friends. Please join us for next time for Brothers, Bothers, and Brothels.